Jason, did you wear a hat out in the sun all weekend? You've got an extreme tan line on your head.
He's definitely been playing golf.
Yeah. You're can't muted. Hear. You're muted. You learned nothing in the draft show.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol United Saints Podcast.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol Podcast United Network. I'm your host, Jeff, and my drunk scale rating is a zero. Following the draft this weekend, we thought it would be a good idea to get together and put out a show to recap the draft. Those of you who listened or watched the first round live on Facebook, and or maybe you listened to the edited version. So the live was 4.5 hours, edited version was 1 hour. We want to thank you for indulging us. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did making it. On this episode, we have Jason, James, and Wesley, who are going to talk about the rest of the draft, as well as some of the moves that were made after the draft, and some undrafted free agent signings. We're going to jump right into the middle of their conversation. Here we go.
By the way, first of all, this is Monday after the draft. Is this the official first Smoke Monday of the Saints franchise? Is this our first Smoke Monday?
Would we not need gun for that?
Right.
So this is a different feeling than we have had in many years about the Monday after the draft. We can look back on the 2017 draft. I'm trying to remember how we maybe felt the Monday after the draft. I mean, there was questions for sure. Nobody knew who Alvin Kamara was, and that felt stupid because we had signed Adrian Peterson. Lattimore had the hamstring injuries that a lot of people were saying that he wasn't going to be able to be drafted because he was going to have hamstring injuries his entire career. So, I mean, I looking back, it sounds like that was probably a great Monday after the draft. I don't know if it was.
Remember, a lot of people were disappointed that we got Ramczyk because they wanted Reuben Foster.
For sure. Yeah. But how did that work out? Man.
Right.
Prison is that guy in? Can we write him a letter?
That's a bullet dodged if ever I've seen one.
But my goodness. I mean, yeah, that's Ramczyk wanted to quit football. Lattimore had the hamstring injuries. I mean, Ramczyk did quit football and got talked back into playing football again. And Alvin Kamara was, who the hell was that guy? We drafted a third string running back to sit behind Ingram and Peterson.
Right. I mean, so maybe we were excited about Marcus Williams. Maybe.
Maybe. This is a real different thing for the Monday after the draft, immediately kind of having some exciting things and outlook on the season.
Yeah. So obviously the first pick, and this was my favorite moment of the live stream of the draft, when Wesley realized and announced that the Washington Commanders had traded, and then all of a sudden it popped up and it was like, oh shit, it's the Saints. We're on the clock. That 5 minutes whilst we were waiting for that pick was brilliant. You know, we were all on edge, and I think we all kind of knew who we were going to take with the first pick. You know, finally, the Saints have done what we've wanted them to do for a while, and they've taken a very, very good skill position player with a high draft pick by drafting Chris Olave. So do you want to quickly go through your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I'm as excited as can be. And I went back and looked the other day, and I think probably most Saints fans know who Ross Jackson is. Me and him chat back and forth, and I sent him a screenshot of last January, a message I had sent him. And it was after me and him had been talking about Chris Olave for months. But on January 18th, 2021, so, I mean, almost a year and a half ago now, I sent him a message. It was the day after the season ended. And I put a hashtag, I love Olave. And me and him have been talking for a couple of months about that I wanted Chris Olave in the 2021 draft. And I was so disappointed when he said he was going back to Ohio State, because I like the character part of it, because the only thing he was going back for was to win a national championship. He had nothing else to prove as a wide receiver. He was going to be a top 15 pick a year ago. So, I mean, I kind of liked the character part of it, of, okay, this is a guy that he's not just in it for the money. He probably cannot make his draft stock go any higher, no matter what he does. And he's going back because he cares about his teammates and, you know, and what he, the commitment that he made that college players basically don't believe in anymore. Man, it's an unreal thing kind of looking back, because I've wanted this guy for a year and a half. And so, of course, he's never going to be a New Orleans Saint.
Of course not.
And the fact that we went through all this and he fits perfect still a year later, and the fact that we've got him is, I mean, honestly, almost unbelievable to me.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable as an LSU, my favorite LSU player. Like, it's us getting Joe Burrow. Like, it's that kind of, it's a guy that I've been obsessed with for a year and a half, because I think
that's the guy you always kept saying in the text chains. That's the guy you wanted.
So it's unbelievable, but super cool.
I saw a tweet earlier on. So to get Olave, essentially, it cost us 98, 101, 120, a 2023 first rounder and a 2024 second rounder to get Chris Olave. If you take into account everything that happened to get to that pick where we got him, that was the cost of that pick. Do you know what? I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, if that's true, there's also a way to look at it with how we moved up and got 19 and basically what those picks are going to be. I mean, there's a lot more, like, you can be negative and make it sound like we super overpaid. You can also, like, take another view and look at it. And it's, I mean, it kind of worked out, but I mean, it's the player that we need. And I mean, by the end of this show, we're going to be talking about how the entire roster looks right now with other players that we've added. And it doesn't matter. I don't care what we paid, because now I think we have one of the most complete rosters in the NFL.
Yeah. And look, you could say, we gave away all these mid-round picks. I mean, sometimes these mid-round picks are good, but other teams fuck them up all the time. So I feel better about getting a guy like possibly a true difference maker than just, you know, a random depth somewhere else. So, and again, it was a massive, massive position to need. I mean, we've been talking about it forever that we needed receivers. Just laughed in Sean Payton's face where we said, the wide receiver room's good. Yeah, they don't need to pick one.
We like who we have in the room.
Right. I do now. So.
Yeah, we definitely do now.
Yeah.
So that was pick 11 that we traded up for Olave.
Yeah, we did. So then pick 19, we drafted the Teron Armstead replacement left tackle Trevor Penning. Now, like Olave, this was another player that was mocked to us quite a lot, I think, during the pre-draft process. And if we couldn't get one of the top three tackles, who were clearly all going to go high, this was the best consolation prize. And, you know, you've probably all seen the video highlights of him and watched tape on him. He's mean. He's nasty. He's gonna be really good, I think.
Yeah. Again, position of need, a real strong player. I mean, like, you know, going into the draft, like wide receiver, offensive tackle. That's what I wanted out of the first round, and that's what they got. So. I was very pleased with what they did. I guess maybe you could say a small school guy, who knows, but
yeah, the we went into this, and there's other ways where you can sit there and talk about running back and safety, but we at least do have a second string running back and third string running back. And we at least do have PJ Williams that can play safety, but maybe not your first choice. We had to get, and again, people want to say if we didn't get one of the top tackles, well, it's okay. You know, James Hurst, maybe. And I like James Hurst, and he did good. But you start looking at some of the numbers of the penetrations that Kamara was not getting last year. We were not moving defensive lines. Kamara was a average running back when being handed the ball last year. The two things we had to do was receiver and some sort of starting tackle. And we did that. And neither one of these guys I didn't think would actually be available at 16 and 19. I kind of thought the other way is that if we took Penning, we were going to be lucky to get him at 16. The trade that we started for Olave, wide receivers went crazy.
Yeah.
And starting to take, and I'm not trading all this around to get Treylon Burks and Smith. I mean, that's if we stayed at 16 and 19, probably what we're doing is, I mean, having to get maybe Penning at 16 and then Treylon Burks at 19 or something weird like that. I mean, that's a, this is as good a scenario as it gets. The top three guys were the top three guys for a reason. Penning and Smith from Tulsa were kind of grouped together. Most people agreeing that Penning was head and shoulders above that, but there was people picking Penning to go top 10 and real regularly to go to the Ravens that I think was at 14.
Something like
that.
Yeah.
That was a very normal thing. I mean, it couldn't have fell much better for us. And just recap, 6'7", 325 pounds, has done a 625 pound squat, and runs a 4.91 40. And it's just, I mean, and honestly, Jason, he runs a 40 faster than any person you're going to play softball with tonight. Like, well, like
he's blowing
like,
me out the water.
I mean, like that's just, that's insane. Of that guy being able to do that. And, I mean, Dennis Allen had a good, he does get some penalties, but Dennis Allen had a perfect line is I'd much rather, be able to pull the reins back on him than try and teach him to be aggressive and teach him to be mean and teach him to bulldoze people. Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's as good as you can get for the way the draft was falling.
Yeah. Especially
since the way last year went, we're going into the season, you're like, oh, offensive line's going to be a strength. And it clearly wasn't. I'm sure injuries had something to do with that. But, yeah, our offensive line was low-key a disaster last year.
For sure.
Yeah, it was. I've already got visions of an Alvin Kamara screen to the left-hand side being led by McCoy, Pete, and Penning. Going to see DBs flying everywhere. Right, speaking of DBs, This pick was a bit of a head scratcher to me when it was announced on Friday night. At pick 49, a cornerback from Tennessee, Alonte Taylor. Now, I'm going to be completely honest with you. This is not a name I'd heard in the pre-draft process. You know, me and you, Wesley, did the PFF mock draft simulator quite a lot.
Yeah.
And not once did I see his name in the list of players that the Saints could pick at any position. So this one was a bit of a head scratcher, and I wonder whether the Saints were hoping somebody or another position was likely to be available at 49. But yeah, it's a head scratcher, this one.
Well, there was a safety that was picked right ahead of him right there, right? The guy from...
Was it Petrie from... no, it was Briscoe, wasn't it, from Penn State, went one spot before.
Yeah, right before. So that I would assume that's who they were looking at, and... I mean, they used all the clock for this pick, so I'm wondering if they started fielding calls, maybe trading down. I know that's not the Saints thing, but it was kind of open. All right, well, the guy they wanted is gone. Can you trade down and grab a pick? But they just decided, screw it. That's the guy they wanted, and that's what they do. You know, even Loomis said they find a guy that they like, and they just get him. They don't bother waiting for him or trading down or anything. If they want him, they're aggressive, and they go get him, and that's what they did. I just assumed, okay, we'll draft him here, and he'll be a nickel or a safety. Not necessarily corner, but I don't know anything about him. So,
yeah, head scratcher is the way to say it for sure. If I was just looking back, hindsight, I would say my guess is that the Saints wanted either Ken Walker, the running back who went 41st to the Seahawks, or Andrew Booth, the cornerback from Clemson that went to the Vikings at 42. I think that was probably where they were. Figured that one of them would drop. I figured that Ken Walker was kind of expected probably to be available there. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to doubt this by the two great moves that we made in the first and say that the Saints panicked, but this is a weird one. Super high RAS score, but someone who knows more than me has watched a lot of Alonte Taylor tape the last couple of days, and they just flat out said he's going to need a lot of coaching, which is fine if it works out, but that's not what you typically want from a second rounder. Honestly, more concerning to me about all this outside of the Alonte Taylor is this makes me wonder if the Saints believe in Paulson Adebo the way that, I mean, he put some excitement. I mean, watching him as a rookie, as a fan, I thought he was involved in some plays. Yeah, he got a couple of penalties. Most of them were kind of ticky-tack penalties, but we also knew with Paulson Adebo, he's a handsy guy. He was going to get penalties. Yeah, yeah. But he wasn't outrageous. It wasn't anything bad. And maybe it was just because I was comparing it to he wasn't Ken Crawley. So I was super happy about everything Paulson Adebo did. But that concerns me more than anything is I just can't imagine this was best player available regardless of position and all that. That's just strange. But, I mean, what the hell do I know?
Yeah, it seems like they got caught with their pants down, almost like the Ruiz pick.
I feel like when they said that we think we can get three of the 50 best players in the draft, Alonte Taylor wasn't the one they were talking about.
No.
I mean, I just...
No, I don't.
And that's why if there was ever a chance to trade down, that would have been the spot.
for sure. So, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, obviously, this is one of those, we got to punt on it for right now and see what happens. This is one of those that's not going to surprise me if he's a really good special teamer for us for a couple of years. It's not going to surprise me if he also is cut and doesn't make the team. I mean, and which sucks for a second rounder, but neither one of those things is going to surprise me.
No. And I mean, the lucky thing for us is our secondary is quite deep.
That's what,
if you say that's what she said one more time, I'm going to pop you.
You can,
we've seen
to...
how quickly that can change. So, I mean,
yeah.
If he works out great, I mean, if this guy's good and him and Roby and Adebo are fighting for a position, excellent. Fantastic. I'm completely happy about that. We're going to pick up a second round pick from somebody next year.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Right. So due to the trade to move up to 11 with Olave, we then didn't pick until the fifth round, where we took linebacker DeMarco Jackson from Appalachian State. Again, not a player I heard of before. Have seen a few clips of him, and he does like to tackle. I'll say that for him. He hits people hard. What are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, he seems to be a little nasty. I like the fact that he was a team captain, I think. And that's one thing you saw with him in the next pick. I think they were both seniors, team captains. You know, there was a certain
high
type,
RAS scores.
Big R. You know, there was a certain type of player the Saints eye and draft. And these two guys kind of fit the bill.
I hate it, but like this is, I mean, probably a really good special teams player. I mean, he could definitely develop into a player like to behind Demario Davis for a couple of years and be some. It is a strange thing. He's since the year in the last 22 years, he's the only FBS player with a single season with 120 tackles, 19 tackles for loss, 6 sacks, and 6 passes defended ever. I mean, that's some range. I mean, he can get after the quarterback. He can get after a runner with the ball. He can defend the passes and all. I've heard him anywhere between 5'11 and 6'1 and 228 and 233. That's little for a, that's not a good size middle linebacker in the NFL. Anywhere in there, that's kind of tough, but no matter what, he seems like a plus special teams player.
Which for a fifth round pick,
a fifth round draft pick.
I take it. Yeah, absolutely.
If he's still on the team on week one, that's a great fifth round draft pick.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what he's doing.
It is. And then with the final pick of the draft in the sixth round, we took Jordan Jackson, a defensive tackle from Air Force. Now, I've read that he might actually project as an end.
Yeah.
Rather than a tackle in the NFL. And from what you see of him, he doesn't look like your stereotypical DT. He does look more of a, you know, the Saints like the tall, rangy defensive ends, don't they? Long reach and stuff like that. And he kind of fits the mold on this one. I know very little about this player. I'm not sure we need to dwell on it for too long, but has anybody got anything to add?
No, just he had 7 sacks this year. Another team captain, another senior.
6 sacks and 11 tackles.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, hope, you know, start off special teams. And if he ends up being a rotation piece in your D line,
I think you're hoping to put some weight on him. He's 6'4, 294. I got to think you're really hoping that guy can get up to 335.
That's a big jump, though, isn't it?
I mean, that's a long way to go. Yeah. But I mean,
at least maybe 315.
But again, we're talking about 6th round draft pick. I mean, if he remotely becomes any type of rotation guy to do anything on the team, and again, this is what Ryan Nielsen does too. And let's not act like we're just so sure that all of our defensive ends, Marcus Davenport, Peyton Turner, are going to be healthy for the season. So, I mean, unless we're just wanting Cam Jordan and Granderson to be our defensive ends, I mean, whatever. I mean, it's a 6th round draft pick. If he ends up playing at all or getting a sack this season, that's an enormous accomplishment.
Yeah. You mean you're writing off Taco Charlton already?
Man. He is a 1st round draft pick. One of many on our defensive line.
He is. Right. So obviously, as soon as the draft ends, everybody quickly jumps to Twitter to see which of the priority UDFAs the Saints.
One thing I was going to say, James, all five of these guys, like captains, seniors, multiple year captains, leaders of their teams, really good character guys that like have seems to come from, they have all family stories and stuff like that. All five of these guys are guys that, I mean, make sense for what the Saints like in their locker room. And like I was upset about, I would have loved for us to take George Pickens. That's not a Saints guy. He's just not, doesn't fit in the locker room, doesn't fit in what we're going to draft. All five of these guys are team captains, leaders, seniors, all that kind of stuff.
You go back to Dennis Allen's introductory press conference. He's been doing the rounds on Twitter today. He pretty much said that, didn't he? That's the type of people he was looking for. So obviously after the draft, you then start looking towards the UDFAs, and the Saints actually signed 17, I think it was, UDFAs. So I've got a list here. I'll just go through the names, and if you want me to stop them, we'll stop on any of them, then you can. So we've got DBs, DeMarcus Fields, Vincent Gray, Jack Corner, and, well, the guy who I really want to make the team just because he likes winding up Falcons fans, Smoke Monday.
I mean, he's almost an all-time Saint already just by going trolling the Falcons already.
And I'll just say, Jack Horner from Iowa, is everything's really interesting about him, the way he plays, what he's got to figure. He plays like real front forward. Like he is a big hitter, loves making plays, and is really smart. He's got to, if he's going to be a rangy safety, he's got to figure out to read the play before leaning forward and running up. But he's, I mean, again, there's a couple of these guys that, I mean, either are super athletic and have some really good times, or have made some plays in college. I mean, this is what you're supposed to see out of the UDFAs. But
yeah, I mean, Smoke Monday was projected to go possibly as high as the fifth round in the draft this year. So we'll go there.
He's a boomer bust player, though. He'll. I mean, you teach him to be a little bit disciplined. And again, read the play before going what he thinks is. I mean, he's an athletic guy that, I mean, loves to play football.
Yeah, no, he does. So linebackers, Joel DeBlanco, Isaiah Pryor, and Nefi Sewell. And I'm assuming he's related to Penny
Sewell,
right? I'm assuming they're brothers.
No idea.
Offensive lineman. Now, I haven't got a first name for this one, but his name looks like Dox Tater. That's what it looks like. Kidd. Derek Schweiger and Eric Wilson, a kicker who I only have a surname of Romo. I hope it's not Tony Romo.
It's John Parker Romo from Virginia Tech.
There you go. See, you know more about this than I do.
Did not miss an extra point last year and did kick a 52-yard field goal.
Okay. I mean, we've got Will Lutz, so he's probably going to struggle to make an impact, but that's assuming Lutz is fit, of course.
Of course.
Punter Daniel Whelan, who I understand is actually from Ireland.
Yes.
So there's a bit of
first Irish-born person in the NFL, sorry, signed to an NFL team?
Maybe? I believe it's the first one since the 70s.
Okay, maybe something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. The first one since 70. Running back, Abram Smith. Now, this is somebody we've given quite a lot of money to.
Yeah, a guy from Baylor. And so this is a guy who was a linebacker until last year. He just became a running back last year and led the Big 12 with 1,600 yards rushing.
That's crazy that a 1,600-yard rusher didn't get drafted. And I know running backs don't have the value that they once did, but, man, 1,600 yards against some decent competition, it's kind of surprising to see him not go drafted.
And Baylor runs a zone scheme, which the Saints do. So I don't know if he didn't have very many catches. I mean, there's things for him to work on. I think it's more that nobody knows how he fits because
he's only got one year. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you worry if you did you have somebody on every single play going and you go here, like call the play and hey, run that way.
We paid him $200,000, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's our second highest paid undrafted free agent.
So, I mean, I would think early on, you got to like his chances of making the team just considering that and just considering the running back room and however many games Kamara is going to miss.
Yeah. We're not going to know that until possibly August, are we, Kamara's? Because that's his next.
There's no way he has his court date in August. Like, they're going to keep putting this off.
So you're, what you're telling me is week four or week five, he is going to be suited up for the Saints in London. Is that what you're telling me?
It's the hope. Hopefully we can put it off that long.
Hopefully, yeah. Tight end Lucas Kroll.
I think he might have a shot to make it.
I'm interested in this guy. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, 6'6", 260. And a 4'5", 440, which, I mean, is insane for a 6'6 guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's Jimmy Graham's size, wasn't it? Wasn't he 6'6", 6'5", something like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not saying he's going to be the next Jimmy Graham, but...
I mean, but definitely somebody to keep an eye on.
He probably has played as much football as Jimmy Graham did before he was drafted. I mean, yes, he's probably not going to become Jimmy Graham, but, I mean, he's at this point of where he's coming out of college, he's comparable in that with that size and athleticism. Yeah. Needs to learn to block, which Jimmy Graham never did. So
never, ever.
If he learns how to block at all, he's ahead of Jimmy Graham. But I mean, this is a receiving tight end. That, I mean, big guy.
Yep, good. And then the final two wide receivers, Rashid Shaheed and Dijon Dixon. Which Excuse me if I butchered the pronunciation.
Shaheed, let's be honest, is a kick returner.
We're
calling wide receiver, but he's getting paid $220,000. What I think, the only reason you pay that guy that money is Deontay Hardy, his job is to be a wide receiver this next year.
Yeah.
Not getting out there, not a messing with punts and kicks, not thinking about maybe when he can get hurt, but let's use him as a wide receiver until he gets hurt rather than letting him get hurt on special teams. I just said, I think that him getting hurt is probably inevitable. So I'm not going to just say let's protect him and keep him unhurt, but this guy is, I mean, he did catch the ball. He did. I think he had 38 or 39 upper 30s catches last year. I mean, this guy's coming in to return the ball for us.
No, he is. So yeah.
And then Dijon Dixon, definitely. I think he had 1,000 yards receiving twice in his college career. And from New Orleans.
There you go.
Yeah. Now I did see that we've also signed a couple of, well, usually they're camp bodies, aren't they? But did I see the name D. Anderson picked up by the Saints? The one that was the receiver that was at LSU but then left LSU.
Could have missed it.
Yeah. But as I said, and then today apparently we signed Pat Swilling's son as well.
Yeah. We did do that for sure.
We signed Pat Swilling's son today. So Mickey Loomis's post-draft press conference was interesting in the fact that he said very publicly and stated very publicly that there was one glaring need or must for the Saints that everybody kind of assumed they knew or the position that he was talking about. And as of 3 p.m. your time today, there was an announcement that the Saints had signed the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. 3 years, $33 million, with I think $18 million guaranteed.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty big, right?
I think it's all right.
I think it's less than what we thought it could be, or what he thought it could be starting this year. One thing that's kind of interesting. So Marcus Williams got a 5-year, $70 million deal, $37 million guaranteed. Mathieu and May together. 3 years, $55.5 million with $32.5 million guaranteed. I'll take the two of them over Marcus and PJ, or Marcus and whoever. I mean,
whoever.
Well, it was Jeff Duncan that put out the tweet that he said that he thinks that Marcus May and Tyrann Mathieu is better than Marcus Williams and Malcolm Jenkins were last year, or potentially better.
Potentially.
Mm-hmm. The 4 games that May is going to miss probably makes it where it's even for me. But yes, with not factoring that in, I agree. I think that this is really interesting because both of these guys play both safety positions.
Yeah.
And Tyrann has played quite a bit of nickel cornerback. Like, he gets moved around. That's the thing that he does, is you never know what position he's playing. And Dennis Allen has not ever been able to fully 100% put in his defense because, I mean, the position safety. We've had safeties that were clear, one box safety and one free safety.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he gets to have some fun with the two of them. And, I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if we every once in a while do stuff to screw with defenses by you drop one of them in coverage a whole bunch of times and then the other one does it out of nowhere. It could be could be pretty interesting with what the two of them can do.
I'm just picturing how crazy that having Tyran and CD in the same backfield.
You're never going to know who's blitzing if our safeties are up, because Gardner Johnson and May and Honey Badger all will get after the quarterback on a
PJ
blitz.
Can blitz too when
and
he's on the field.
PJ has had some big blitzes in the last couple of years too.
Yeah, this defense looks like it can really be special.
And I will say, again, you look at this whole roster, if we have a little bit of health, I mean, this is 100% a playoff team that I believe probably can, I mean, I don't, everybody's going to predict the Bucks to win the South because of Tom Brady and they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, but we are right there with them as far as a 50-50 chance of which one of us is going to win the South. And this is a team that gets some experience and gets rolling, has any kind of health. You're not going to want to play us in the playoffs. I mean, and again,
no.
I have to keep reminding myself, I get excited about Olave and all this stuff. We are a defensive team now, and this defense is going to really hurt some people. And if we get to where what we have not done the last couple of years, while we've had a decent defense, we have not gotten turnovers. And we heard rumors that the Saints, that was their one dig on Marcus Williams. He's a solid player, but we would really like to have some dynamic turnovers. Tyrann Mathieu's that guy. I mean, that's what he does. That's what he's done his entire highlight reel from when he played in high school and college and the whole NFL career is he creates turnovers and havoc.
Is there – so, like, I obviously love the signing. Is there any worry about him being back home and having to deal with friends and family, any kind of issues like that?
So, I love the point. Here's what I'll say, and James and I were talking about this before the show. I don't know of another – professional athlete that has done what Tyrann Mathieu has done. This guy, for all the intangibles as far as being a natural at playing football, did everything possible to screw up his chances of becoming a professional athlete. He loved LSU and LSU loved him, but LSU kicked him out of the school. Like, he was that bad where a superstar that we've heard all kinds of crazy stuff that what they can and have covered up at major universities. He was so blatantly obvious that he was removed from the school, and he has had a 180-degree turnaround. There was multiple two things. One, he wasn't going to be drafted because nobody believed that he could be a professional and just stop being an idiot. Also, they always said that the plays that he made in college, he was too small to live in the NFL and make it. He's the exact same player in the NFL that he was in college. It's so crazy. And this turnaround where he's had for 12 years, 11 years, no problems as a professional. I mean, he's been a leader on every team. He's made an all pro. He's just, so no, I don't think we're worried about that at all. I think that if it was like 3 years into his career and coming off his first rookie deal, I mean, yeah, there's probably still a little bit there. This is a leader who has become an adult. And I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody who was at 19 years old, 20 years old, such a blatant like example of what not to do and how you could ruin a professional career to what he has become is remarkable. And I'm not sure if there's somebody that I can think of that's done it the way he has.
Yeah. Well, you made the point, like you said, when we were talking before, you know, he's welcome back to LSU at every opportunity to speak to the team, you know? So that says a lot that he's at the university that literally kicked him out the door and said, "We don't want you anymore." Invites him back.
It says a lot when you get kicked off by Les Miles. You know?
yeah, it does. It does.
But I mean, I love, and just of course the excitement with Saints fans bringing him back. You got your LSU fans loving it.
Yeah, I've got a feeling his jersey is going to be quite popular this year.
Such an exciting day to bring in a guy like that.
It's crazy. I mean, and for so many reasons. One, we need the position so much, but someone who is a local has the, you know, what he's done at LSU, it's amazing.
Yeah. No, it is. Now, do we think we've got any more holes that we need to fill on the roster? Is there anything that we should really be looking at? I'm thinking running back,
I mean, running back is really the only thing.
Tight end.
Possibly defensive tackle.
Yeah, defensive tackle, which, I mean, we want to talk about, you know, people redeeming what they've done in Louisiana. Akeem Hicks is out there. And it's been a long time since he had his problems and did what he did to, you know, be mad at the Saints and all that. So, I mean, I wouldn't hate it.
No, no, no. And he is good friends with Cam Jordan as well, by the looks of it, when you've seen him talking on Twitter. But yeah, I think running back DT or maybe tight end is where we should look. So now we kind of got an idea of what the roster is going to be. In my opinion now, the success of the team kind of rides on the shoulders of the quarterback. If Jameis can do what he did at the start of last season, this team's going to go deep. It really is. If he cannot turn the ball over, you know, I think we might see a better run game this year, which will help him. I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Jameis this year now.
Yeah, but especially now you're going to have a healthy Michael Thomas and Olave right there. I mean, you've got two pretty damn good receivers. Hopefully you got a better offensive line to go along with the running game. I mean, yeah. And the defense is still what it was last year. So yeah, I mean, I hope his knee is ready. I mean, the good thing is he got hurt so early in the season. And nowadays, I mean, ACL tears, guys seem to be able to come back from that faster than you used to. Oh yeah, he'll be out of year. It's not quite. So, I mean, and you know, he's going to work hard. You know, he wants it. I mean, you could see it. He's that kind of guy that's going to put everything he has into it. Man, this team could be really scary.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, when we look back on it, everything that happened probably is going to end up working out for the best of that he sat behind Drew Brees for a year and just talked to Drew and Sean Payton and then won the starting job, got to show what he could do with no receivers and basically no offensive line. Yes, he got injured, but he's been able to think about this for a long time and think about this team and, like, what he did well at the first few games of last year and then where his opportunities are. And he's going into this. We real early on made our commitment to him. And he's not competing for a starting job this year. He is the starter. There's zero doubt about it. Andy Dalton is here to be the veteran presence holding the clipboard. And he's set up in a perfect scenario where, I mean, when we look back on it, the ACL tear and the time that it gave him off to mentally train and be ready, and the commitment he's shown about getting back in shape is fantastic. I mean, it's going to work out, I think, really well for us. And I'm excited. I mean, we knew things that he could work on last year, the short intermediate passing game. He's got to get better at that. I think that Michael Thomas helps that. He's got to be able to use Kamara. And then we didn't even barely get to see. He had nobody to throw to last year, and he's still showing off the deep ball. I mean, to throw into nobody. You got Kenny Stills and Kevin White dropping everything that hits him in the damn hands. And he still was connecting with other people. And we get him a couple of decent guys here. And I mean, this is it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting because we're going to be able to take some chances, I think, on offense because of what our defense can do. But it's there's not really a reason to not be excited and or at least hopeful.
No, true. I mean, you just look at the receiver room now. You got Thomas, Olave, Callaway, Harty. That's probably your four, right? Have I missed anybody?
Callaway, Smith.
Oh, Traquan Smith. Yeah, I forgot about Traquan Smith. Yeah. So Traquan's going to be your,
he can make you
your three, four. Yeah, he's going to be your three.
Yeah, but then that's Smith okay, is competing though to be our fifth receiver. And let's just – there's a receiver and an LSU player that's a free agent that has visited with the Saints, tweeted out immediately that he's very happy for his boy Tyrann Mathieu. Jarvis Landry is out there, and we talked about this a little bit when we were doing the draft, but Jarvis Landry fills a different hole that Michael Thomas and Olave does not fill.
Yep.
He is playing that Callaway Smith kind of role, and Jarvis Landry's better than the two of them. So who knows what's going to happen, but if Jarvis Landry comes here for next season, we're going to have, that's the best three person wide receiver group in the NFL, arguably, like really, really close, arguably, on a team that is got a quarterback who can sling the ball downfield, on a team that our defense is our signature.
Yeah. It's nice, I mean, isn't it?
It's pretty, I mean, again, now we're kind of getting into the things.
Can I put the Randy Marsh picture up?
So here I got this for you. I wanted to go. So here's Saints off season. Okay. When we started, we wasted a couple of weeks trying to get Deshaun Watson to come here, figuring out that we were probably going to be his third choice, but he was not going to come here anyway. We lost Marcus Williams and Teron Armstead to below market deals. Both of them signed for less than what anybody thought. Malcolm Jenkins is retired. We signed a safety to replace him who's going to be suspended for 4 games. We pursued Marcus Valdez-Scantling as our savior at number two receiver, and he went somewhere else. We signed no free agent or left tackle at wide receiver, left tackle or wide receiver free agents. We only drafted 5 players, and there's a really good chance that 2 of them don't make our team. We traded next year's first and the following year's second round draft pick. Sean Payton quit. We hired Dennis Allen. We kept Pete Carmichael. And our defensive coordinator job is split between 2 people because we couldn't make a choice.
And we were $100 million over the cap.
And we were $100 million over the cap. Okay. You throw all that and you really don't think that there's any way to then maneuver around and through and after that to where we go, pretty damn good offseason, and the Monday after the draft, I feel really good about our team and that we're going to be a double digit win team. Yep. I think we're going to come down to us and the Bucks are going to really be competing for the NFC South, and whoever wins, that's going to be first or second in the NFC possibly. So, I mean, and I mean, all those things really did happen. Like, and like probably had all of us kind of freaking out for a little bit because There was a ways there where the Marcus May thing was like the only positive thing that happened. And we were all kind of like, but is that great? Like, I
mean, yeah.
Pretty amazing turnaround. And this is just a trust Loomis, trust the staff. I really like what Dennis Allen's doing, the way he's, and again, we don't know in that room who's fighting for what, but at his press conferences, he's saying the right things and he's playing the part of what exactly who we'd want him to be.
Yeah. So with all of this and the fact that we've signed Matthew, we've drafted the players that we've all wanted, which we never did under Peyton. Do you think that's made a difference that Peyton's not in that room anymore? Do you think that's made a bit of a difference?
Because you got to think, I mean, I know Loomis is the GM, but if Peyton wanted something, that's what Loomis did. You know, they kind of worked together. It was all about whatever Sean wanted. Or, you know, what he didn't want, as in receiver.
No.
Didn't feel the need to get it. I mean, clearly, with him gone, Allen's like, hey, man, I know what our right receiver room looks like, and it sucks. You just had to address it.
And I'm going to be, like, careful not to, I mean, you know, shit on Sean Payton too much because, I mean, for the last 15 years, he's one of the best coaches in the NFL, offensive mastermind, and I mean, there's going to be a debate forever about if it was him or Drew Brees or maybe Pete Carmichael. I mean, maybe Pete Carmichael made the 2 of those guys look good.
Wow.
I mean, but the one thing, and I've always said this, is the one big drawback to Peyton for me was he really, really wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. And the Taysom Hill thing is going to still hurt me for a couple of years because even if Taysom Hill becomes the best tight end version of Taysom Hill, he's not worth $10 million plus a year. So we've got a couple more years of, I mean, whatever he does, it's not worth that. I think that when it came to draft picks, now don't get me wrong, that worked out great for Alvin Kamara. Sean Payton walked in there and said, that's our guy. Trade up for him. Nobody else is going to draft him, but that's our guy. When they had a half-ass workout in a conversation. So, a workout where Alvin Kamara said, I don't want to work out for you today. So, I mean, it worked, but there's a bunch of times where it didn't work. And so, I can't be mad at it right now. I don't know if Peyton's here. I don't know if we leave with Olave and Penning. I don't believe we do.
No, I don't think we would have done either.
And it also brings up, I mean, there is a level of excitement for the season just because it's, I mean, last year was, well, no Drew, what's it going to be like? And now this year with no Peyton, it's like, it's just going to be interesting. There's a lot of questions. Nobody really knows exactly how the team is going to is going to fall in behind him? How is he going to be as a head coach? I mean, I would say, yeah, I kind of like not having expectations, but after this offseason, after everything you just mentioned, now I'm kind of like, well, shit, we're a 10, 11, 12 win team. Let's fucking go.
Well, I was just about to make that point. You know, if you'd have said to us 3 years ago, you're going to lose Drew 1 year and you're going to lose Sean Payton the year after, but then you're going to, after the draft, the first Monday you record after the draft, you're going to be really, really positive about what's happening. You wouldn't have expected it, would you?
No way.
Yeah, this. No way. I mean, and again, you throw in all the stuff with what we've done with our salary cap, which, I mean, this last 2 years is when it's supposed to bite us. And now I can sit there and say the same thing for next year. It's not as bad, but still there's questions about how we get to the salary cap. But I don't know. It's pretty remarkable. And again, all we've heard from the media outside of New Orleans is how we go into the offseason with the national media telling us the Saints aren't going to be able to sign people. They're going to have to make tough cuts. They're going to do this and they're going to do that. I mean, and it doesn't happen. Hey, interesting thing. Deontay Hardy at $3.8 million has the highest base salary of any New Orleans Saint this season.
Highest base salary.
The highest base salary is Deontay Hardy at $3.8 million.
That can't be right.
Because everybody's done it under the
signing bonuses,
the minimums, and the signing.
But even so, even though we did all that maneuvering to clear up room for Watson, is that maybe where some of the Matthew money goes?
Yeah,
because we did free up a lot of space for this year, and I mean, unless they're just saving it for next year with all the crazy ghost years and all the kicking cans.
I think we've still got a running back, a defensive player, a defensive tackle, and a maybe another wide receiver that we signed. But if we roll anything over into next year, that'd be great. Yeah. We've also got to be ready for injuries and stuff that's going to happen in the middle of the season. You need some capital there available to spend. So, I mean, I'm not questioning anything anymore.
No.
I will say one thing I'm excited about is, I mean, if you go look, Michael Thomas is daily now posting some sort of fun, positive thing about the Saints. He looks like the chip off his shoulder. I mean, I don't want to say he has no reason to have been humbled by the injuries, but I think the time away has finally made him miss football and miss the grind. And he looks like I don't need him to be a leader on the team, but I need him to be like a positive teammate. And it looks like he's that guy right now. I mean, he's tweeting about offensive players and defensive players and people that compete with him at the same position as him, which is great to see. And I really hope that we're still seeing that 5-6 yeah. months from now.
We just need him to stay fit and catch 100 balls. That's it. Just do that. Mm-hmm. And maybe smile occasionally. That'll be it. Right. Has anybody got anything else they want to discuss or add before I wrap this one up?
I'm done. It's kind of crazy how excited we all are right now.
This is unreal for the Monday after the draft, for our first Smoke Monday of 2022.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, two more days. The NFL is announcing the international games. Yep. I don't know of anybody else from the Dome Patrol that's going to follow through with their word and be there, but I know the three of us will. Mm-hmm. besides the three of us, I'm not sure how much faith I have. And I know Ben's going to buy a ticket. No idea after this past weekend if I can trust Ben to make it to a game. No telling what kind of scenario Ben could end up in, and he could be a mile from the game in a bathtub.
You might see him on the Saturday, but you might not see him on the Sunday.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't recover from his hangovers very well. He disappears for about 3 days after he drinks. And I'm excited. So we've got two more days. On Wednesday, they're going to announce the international schedule.
Yeah.
I'll be buying flights within 24 hours of when they announce that.
Yeah. The Wembley game rumor leaked on Facebook earlier on, and I think it's going to be Jacksonville against the Broncos. Is the Wembley game. But we think ours is going to be either the 2nd or the 9th of October, isn't it? And it's more than likely going to be the Vikings, I think, is the current.
Possibly Bengals, but looks like Vikings.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's big, particularly for me over in the UK who hasn't seen a game since 2017. So yeah, looking forward to that one.
It's going to be awesome. You going to have your Matthew jersey?
Yes.
I'll be wearing that one if I'm not wearing my Landry jersey.
Yeah, Hicks, Akeem Hicks, is he going to get a jersey? No, anyway,
I will get an Olave and a Matthew jersey this offseason for sure.
Yes, yeah, no, definitely. Right, just want to thank everybody for checking in and listening to our post-draft recap and us discussing the Tyrann Mathieu signing. Like I said, really positive. Really looking forward to the season. Roll on September. So I suppose I better do the spiel now, hadn't I?
I got you covered, James. That's all the show we have for you right now. We're going to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol United Network, where you only have to subscribe to one feed to receive multiple podcasts, including the 2-Point Conversion instant reaction show that we do every week during the football season immediately following the Saints games. The Dome Patrol podcast, that's what you're listening to right now. The Pelican Plunge, obviously about the Pelicans, and the Tiger's Den with Scott about the LSU Tigers. Follow our Dome Patrol Twitter accounts at Dome Patrol PCast and at Dome Patrol UK. Follow us on Facebook to watch live streams like the one we just did with the draft party. And if you want to participate in game day chat or everyday chat, you can DM us on Twitter to get an invitation to the Dome Patrol Discord server. And if you want to listen to us the old-fashioned way, go to DomePatrolPodcast.com. Say bye-bye, donkeys. Bye-bye, draft donkeys. Good night, Who Dat Nation. This is happy fun. It's true. You know we got a good thing going.